way up, and then more into the Europe. So I believe we were much further than 500 miles from that point.
Yeah, that's impressive, really impressive, and that might have been some extra propagation. From 30,000 feet, your line of sight distance is something in the vicinity of 200 or so miles, 250 miles. And so if you were like 500 miles away, that was more than just line of sight and altitude. The astronauts, when they're up at 130 nautical miles, which is a hell of a lot more altitude than you were at, and yes, they have 1,500 miles of range because of Earth curvature. Fun type stuff. The radio is great. The range you can get with very simple radios when you've got enough altitude to give you line of sight is really a mind blower compared to what we normally get with terrestrial communication. Okay, I think we've got, I know that John's got a question, but I think we're going to wait until we get to the mailbag. Let's see if Mel's there with his mailbag. K2KEY, K2RAW. Go right ahead, Mel.
No, not pissed off. Something with the family tonight, over.
Okay, very quickly I heard Mel saying that he's at a family gathering tonight. He's probably operating with a handy talkie, and so we're going to skip the mailbag tonight, if I understand correctly, because of where he's located and what's going on in his life. The next person with a question was John, KC2WGB. Go right ahead, John, K2RIW.
Good evening, Dick, and hello, Mel. Enjoy yourself out there. Dick, I have an antenna question. Last month, you spoke about an antenna that was made out of a sheet of copper, a particular piece of metal in a rectangle fashion, and the slotted antenna that was cut into it. You remember that conversation, right?
Yeah, this is a conversation I've had a number of times. It's called Babinet's Rule. And I'll just run by it for anybody who hasn't heard this before, and that is, we all know about real antennas. Just like you've got matter and antimatter in this universe, you've got antennas and anti-antennas. Most of the antennas, dipole-like and Yagi-like antennas, are a little strips of metal, which you and I call the driven element, the director, the cubical quad driven element, and whatever, a strip of metal with insulation of air all around it. And in many cases, the Babinet's Rule says that if you do everything the opposite, you start off with a great big sheet of metal, and you cut a slot where the dipole used to be, so to speak. So in other words, what used to be insulator, you make conductor. What used to be conductor, you make insulator. That's Babinet's Rule, and you get the exact same antenna pattern. You get the exact same gain. You get the exact same performance. The only thing that's crazy about it is that a horizontally polarized antenna becomes a vertically polarized slot. For simple antennas, for sure, you invert the conductor and non-conductor, and in theory, you've got the exact same antenna. So go ahead, and you can have a lot of fun with that. Since there's 5,000 real antennas, does that mean there's 5,000 inverted antennas? Interesting question. KC2WGB, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick. I was doing one of my little thought experiments. I could do the same thing with a window screen, or screening material, copper or aluminum, I would assume. And I could cut a piece, say, 30 inches by 24. And I could cut a slot in the middle of it, longitudinally along the longer length. And then I could coat it with some kind of epoxy to stiffen it. And then I could raise it on a flagpole, could I not? And it would be a vertical polarized 2-meter antenna. Would something like that work?
Done correctly, the answer is going to work extremely well. Once you understand Babinet's Rule, you now understand what an awful lot of the smarter people doing law enforcement vehicle antenna installations will do. Every single slot that you can cut into the sheet metal of an airplane wing, the fuselage, the rudder, the horizontal stabilizer, the fender of your car, the roof of your car, where the fender meets the body of the car, and so on. Every place that you can cut a slot, cover it over with fiberglass and paint and anything else you want to. If you want to hide it, you can make a beautiful antenna. There are law enforcement vehicles where the side view mirror is the antenna. There are vehicles where the rear speaker looking up through the rear window is a double ridge waveguide slotted antenna, and so on. So every place where you can put a slot in a piece of metal, you can make an antenna out of it if you're smart enough, and you can give the antenna some extremely high performance. If you want a vertically polarized slot antenna with your piece of window screening, you're going to cut the slot in a horizontal manner. You're going to slide the Stanley knife horizontally when you cut the slot, and that will make a vertically polarized antenna because it's in the middle of the slot where the voltage is the maximum. You could call it a very, very small piece of waveguide. That slot antenna is a piece of waveguide where the length of the waveguide happens to be a 32nd of an inch, the thickness of the screening, if you know what I mean. And it will be a bidirectional radiator. It'll have the exact same pattern as a vertically, well, I catch up now. You've got to be a little bit careful on this one. Let me drop. That horizontal slot will be vertically polarized, and it'll have a slight bit of difference in the antenna pattern broadside to the screening versus edgewise to the screening. There'll be a little bit of a dip in the pattern in the edgewise viewing of that screening of a vertically polarized signal. It'll have a slight difference, and therefore it's not exactly a one-to-one in antenna pattern of real dipole versus inverse dipole, but it's very close. And so once you start studying something called FSS, Frequency Selective Surfaces, once you get smart enough in cutting all kinds of triangles and slots and swastika symbols and everything else into sheets of metal, you can make all kinds of phased array antennas, and you wouldn't believe what's possible. You just started scratching the surface, John. There's a whole new world about to open up to you. KC2WGB, K2RIW.
Very good, Dick. Now, my next question is, it would be better to cut the slot at the length of half wave because of the lack of a counterpoise, would it not?
In the case of an ordinary wire dipole, you tend to make the wire dipole about a half wavelength or an odd multiple of a half wavelength, because there you come up with an impedance that is almost purely resistive. It may be a little too high or too low, but it's purely resistive. Make the wire dipole too short, and it becomes highly capacitive in its impedance very fast. Make the wire dipole a little bit too long compared to half wavelength, and it starts becoming inductive real fast. The slotted antenna is the exact same thing. If the horizontal width of that vertically polarized slot that you're talking about, if the horizontal width of the slot that you cut is very close to a half wavelength, then the resistive impedance of that antenna, the impedance of that antenna will be primarily resistive. Slots act backwards. Make the slot too short, and it will be inductive. Make it too long, it'll be capacitive. That's the exact opposite of what happens with a dipole. And by the way, if you're really smart, and you start combining a slot with an ordinary dipole with just the right combination, where one goes inductive off frequency and the other becomes capacitive, and you've got them coupled just right, boy, can you get bandwidth out of an antenna, and that is one of the patents I filed for about 2 years ago. So there's all kinds of crazy combinations. So yeah, just because you've made the slot too long or too short, and it's now capacitive or inductive, doesn't stop you from properly feeding it. It just means the feed network gets more complicated, if you know what I mean, John. KC2WGB, K2RIW.
Very good, Dick. Yes, I like that answer. It would be sort of a stealth approach for a friend of mine, and I came up with that idea, but I just wanted to run it by you before he builds any models. But I was just thinking of that, and I thought it might work.
Question. Yeah, Wesley recognized there's a number of good books on the subject of frequency selective surfaces. That'll help you. If you go to any of the issues of the Antenna Engineering Handbook, first issue, McGraw-Hill, 1980, by Henry Jasek. Was it 80? Yeah, I think it was 80. Or was it 70? But there's been 4 issues ever since. You go to the slotted antenna chapter of the Antenna Engineering Handbook. Study it for a while. You'll see a zillion ways that you can put slots into waveguides, slots into sheets of metal, and make them into antennas. And there's all kinds of ways you can make a stealthy antenna. As I gave you examples before, every piece of sheet metal on that automobile or on that airplane can become an antenna if you're smart enough in the way you do it. Go ahead, Wesley, K2LIW.
146850. It's a disfrequency of this repeater. And then you make the horizontally polarized antenna. But then you want to have vertically polarized antenna. You always got into exhaust mix because you try to make the slot antennas, and then you're dealing with the signals that are horizontally polarized. Now, by placing the antenna by an angle, regular antenna by an angle, you make that possible to work in both patterns. How would you deal with that with the slotted antenna?
Any linear polarized antenna, with rare exception, can be mechanically rotated so that it starts off horizontal, then transmits slant 45 degree polarization, then transmits vertical polarization, then slant 45 to the other side, and then horizontal again. You can usually rotate any antenna. So by physically rotating, mechanically rotating the antenna, you can adjust the polarization. In the case of a wire-like antenna, a vertical piece of wire, a quarter-wave ground plane, or a 5/8 wave ground plane, is primarily a vertically polarized antenna. The craziness of a slot antenna is that you cut the slot horizontally, and it generates a vertically polarized wave. And you can sort of see that because, let's go back to the piece of wire, let me drop, and I'll get to your question in a second. Stand by. In the case of a vertically polarized piece of wire, a quarter-wave ground plane antenna, at one instant of time, the top of the wire is highly positive, and the bottom is almost 0 volts. And a half wavelength later, the top of the wire is highly negative, and the bottom is a very low voltage by comparison. But there's a vertical distribution of voltage on the wire, and it launches a vertically polarized wave. Now let's go over to the slot antenna. John has just cut a horizontal slot with his Stanley knife across this piece of screening, or copper foil, or his aluminum foil, or his aluminum sheeting, whatever he wants to build it into, and he's made the slot approximately a half wavelength long. When that slot is radiating a signal, he's going to be putting a vertically polarized piece of coaxial cable where maybe 4 inches from the right-hand shorted end of the slot is where he's going to locate this thing. The shield is going to be connected to the lower half of the slot. The center conductor is going to be connected to the upper half of the slot. As he slides that piece of coax closer to the short circuit end on the right-hand side, he will be seeing a lower impedance. As he slides it further away from that short, he'll be seeing a higher impedance. He chooses the right spot, he'll see 50 ohms, and he'll be happy. But while he's now radiating a signal with that slot, at one instant of time, the center of the slot above the cut point will be positive, and below the cut point will be negative. Half wavelength later, it'll be reversed. In other words, across the slot itself is where you're developing the voltage, and that gives you a little bit more of a feeling for why a horizontal slot gives you a vertically polarized wave. I know it's a little bit complicated at first. Let me drop. Now, there's nothing stopping John from taking that particular antenna I just described. He grabs that whole chunk of screening in his case. He's looking at that screening broadside. He grabs it with his left hand on the left side and his right hand on the right side. He starts raising his right hand. He starts lowering his left hand until the slot is now tilted 45 degrees to the ground with the right-hand side of the slot higher than the left-hand side. He will be now transmitting slant vertically polarized antenna, slant polarization halfway between horizontal and vertical, and the positive will be the upper left and the negative will be down to the lower right, if you know what I mean. Almost any antenna can be mechanically rotated like that. The E-field voltage that's issued by the antenna becomes, in free space, a E-field voltage, and at right angles to it, an H-field voltage, as we call it, magnetic effect and electrostatic effect, electronic effect, let me call it, and they're always at right angles when you're in the far field. And whenever you make that E-field 45 degrees away from your antenna that's doing the reception or doing the transmitting, you will lose 3 decibels. It is a cosine theta function. So as the peak polarization response of your antenna starts deviating from the signal you want to receive, and you measure that difference in angles of theta, and you multiply cosine theta of that angle, cosine of that angle, that tells you what the new voltage is that you're going to be getting. 45 degrees, cosine of that is 0.707, if I remember correctly. That's the voltage you're going to get, the 70% of the voltage, because you've rotated the antenna. 70% of the voltage, because power is E squared over R, you get half the power. So now you can see the mathematics of why any antenna that has a given polarization and you rotate it versus the signal that you...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
You rotate it versus the signal you're listening to. The signal falls off voltage-wise cosine theta. Square that voltage or square that cosine if you like. You'll know exactly how many dB down you are. The antenna you're listening to me with right now is a 14-element Yagi on 100 feet of tower, aimed directly at this particular repeater. Because it's tilted at a 45-degree angle, the signal I'm giving the repeater is 3 decibels weaker than it would have been if my antenna was purely vertically polarized. But because the antenna is halfway between the horizontal and vertical people, I can talk to the repeater with a 3 dB disadvantage. I can talk to this horizontally polarized sideband people with a 3 dB disadvantage. And to me, that's a pretty good compromise. And you can do that with any kind of antenna. Almost doesn't matter what the kind of antenna is, Wes. N2XJN for any further comments on that, K2RIW.
For the purpose of stealth antennas in the body of the vehicle, how would you deal with 45 degrees?
The stealth antenna you install on an automobile, because almost no portion of the automobile is a nice flat piece of sheet metal that goes to infinity. If you really take Babnet's rule absolutely literally, you should be cutting a slot of opening into a sheet of metal that goes to infinity in all directions. That's the pure world. You can cut down that sheet of metal to probably one wavelength square, and you're going to get 98% of that performance, 95% of that performance. You don't have to go to infinity. Now, if you start curving the piece of metal, in other words, the sheet metal that's on the fender of that car, on the roof of that car, on the hood of the car, every piece of that sheet metal is curved. Therefore, even though you cut a nice straight slot, and by the way, you don't have to cut a straight slot, you can cut a squiggly slot, a curved slot, there's all kinds of things you can do when you start studying frequency-selective surfaces. But because you're launching currents into the sheet metal by way of that slot, and the sheet metal is curved, the antenna pattern you get is a hell of a lot more complicated than you think. You think you've cut a 45-degree slot antenna, and you're issuing 45-degree polarization? Well, maybe from one particular look angle, if you're in a helicopter and you're looking down at that car at a 50-degree depression angle, maybe you'll see a slant 45-degree polarization. In reality, you're launching currents in all kinds of directions onto a curved sheet of metal, into an automobile, where even the pieces of metal are periodically insulated with each other with rubber to make sure that there's no clicking sounds as you drive down the road. The real pattern you get when you cut a slot into a sheet of metal like an automobile is complicated as all hell. It's got lobes and peaks and valleys all over the place. If you put it into a three-dimensional antenna plotting machine and you plotted this three-dimensional antenna pattern where red is the high gain points and the...
Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Where blue is the low gain points and it shows a dip in the pattern, you make those three-dimensional antenna plots like you get out of a Satomo machine, a French company that makes a very popular high-tech antenna laboratory these days. You get that antenna pattern, and almost all antennas of the kind you and I are talking about look like an apple. It's a red apple with a couple of dips where the stem comes out on one end and a little dip in the other end. When the total amount of real estate you've devoted to the antenna section, the slot in this case, is small in wavelengths, the pattern you get, you'd be amazed how close it is to a quasi-omnidirectional pattern with a couple of minor nulls in a couple of directions. So not to worry about what polarization is coming out of the automobile. It's a lot more complicated than you think. Look what you've started here, John. KC2WGB, KQRIW in the TechNet.
I'm sorry, one more time. My van has a very large area of the roof, and it's a plastic because it's a conversion van. And I don't have to cut anything. All I have to do is just put a very thin sheet of metal, a foil, whatever. I can experiment with that and just simply stick it to the roof from outside, or I can simply take the ceiling from inside and put it inside. How would I then be able to such a huge area? You know what is that van like? It's a Chevy conversion van with a plastic raised up roof. How would you then design an antenna that would work for 2 meters or eventually 2 meters and 70 centimeters back to you?
Well, you've got a substantial amount of area of the roof of your vehicle, which is an insulating material. You'll be amazed how many options you've got to put an antenna in there. Should you put in a sheet of metal and cut a slot in it and make it a slot antenna? That's one possible approach. Should you put a pure dipole antenna in there? That's another approach. In other words, just lay a dipole onto the fiberglass, let's call it. And yes, the fiberglass is going to give you some dielectric loading, which means the actual physical length of the dipole is going to be a little bit shorter than the half wavelength because of the plastic loading effect. But that's easy to compensate. And with an antenna impedance meter, you'll find out real fast if your particular dipole-like antenna that you've laid on that roof. You could, for instance, as an experiment, start off with sheets of copper tape and lay these two strips of copper tape into a dipole pattern or a X pattern, if you want to make a turnstile antenna, and you could lay that onto the roof and feed transmission lines into those pieces of copper tape. And should the copper tape be on the outside of the car or the inside of the car under the plastic roof? Those are some of the details. So there's lots and lots of ways that you can put an antenna onto that roof. What you'd like in many cases is to be a pure vertically polarized omnidirectional antenna. And now we've got a little bit of a problem because whichever polarization you desire, if I want vertical polarization out of an antenna, I must devote vertical real estate. In the case of a simple quarter wave whip or 5/8 wave whip antenna, the majority of the antenna is a vertical piece of wire. I've made a real investment in vertical metallic real estate that's launching the signal, and by golly, it's going to launch a vertically polarized signal. If I now take that vertically polarized quarter wave ground plane antenna, let me drop, and I squeeze it down shorter and shorter and shorter and keep impedance matching it, it'll get very narrow band, but I can keep making it a vertically polarized antenna. At the instant that I squeeze it down to zero altitude, because now it is a horizontal piece of copper tape laid across the roof, and it has no vertical real estate per se, only the 64th of an inch of thickness of the copper, so to speak. No real vertical real estate. In theory, except for the crazy effects that the automobile is going to give you, there is no vertical polarization of the signal you're radiating. That's not necessarily bad. If you made crisscross pieces of copper tape and you made a turnstile antenna and you fed them the forward and aft dipole you fed one phase and the left and right dipole you fed the other phase 90 degrees delayed, that would be a turnstile antenna. Viewed top view, it's circular polarized. Viewed from the horizon, it is a thoroughly omnidirectional, horizontally polarized antenna. But that's not bad, because although it'll give you a slight disadvantage when you're close to the repeater, because you're close to the repeater, the signal is so strong, you can tolerate the disadvantage. When you're far from the repeater, there's a hell of a lot of chirality of Mother Nature's universe. By that I mean all that signal that's bouncing off the ground, the buildings, the water towers, and everything else. When you're 5 miles from that repeater, you think you're launching a pure horizontally polarized signal from the turnstile and the roof of your car. By the time it gets to Glen Oaks, it's at least slant 45 polarized, and it's an elliptical polarization. If you try to, with polarization, create a null on the roof of your car by making the antenna purely horizontal when the repeater is purely vertical, and you would stop the reception, you couldn't do it. So there's lots of ways you can make the antenna, but to make it vertically polarized in that environment without adding some real altitude is going to be a little bit different.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Now, the next step you could do beyond that would be to take this crisscross of aluminum, of copper tape that I just described as a turnstile antenna. You feed it your purely horizontally polarized omnidirectional. Every direction, there'd be no no in that antenna. If you now have another whip in the middle of that, and you feed the whip with reference to those four ground plane radials, if you know what I mean, now you've got a vertically polarized antenna on your insulated roof. You've got lots of possibilities. Your biggest problem is going to be making it mechanically strong enough so that it survives the trees you drive under and whatever. You could also put a sheet of metal underneath the fiberglass and put a mag mount on the top. You've got lots of possibilities.
How about spiral? If the antenna is like it looks like a spiral when you look from the top.
The so-called helical antenna, and you read the appropriate chapter of Krauss's book on helixes. You also, I think there's a chapter on that in the Antenna Engineering Handbook. There's two different ways you can make a helix. If each individual turn of the helix is close to one wavelength, then it launches a primarily axial mode circular polarized signal. That helix that comes out of the roof of your car, if it was one wavelength in circumference, would be squirting a signal straight up. If you make the helix smaller than full wavelength per turn, then it becomes a transverse mode helix. It really becomes a vertically polarized monopole where you've just added some extra metal by the squiggliness of the... Your rubber duck is one of those. Your rubber duck is a transverse mode helix antenna because each individual turn inside that rubber of the rubber duck antenna is way smaller than a full wavelength. It cannot launch an axial mode. It only launches a transverse mode. So the advantage of the helix in your particular case is that a little less length of copper is required to reach half wavelength or quarter wavelength, if you know what I mean. So the helix will give you a little bit physically smaller antenna if that's what you want to do. OUS, K2RIW.
I didn't understand it properly. I was talking about a pancake coil, which is a completely flat, horizontal, on the roof, with a proper and spirally, it looks like a spiral, it looks like a helix, but it is a completely flat to the roof, but you...
A very popular...
2 meter, transmit.
A very popular antenna, 20 or so years ago, was the so-called hula hoop antenna. It really is a little bit less than half wavelength circumference loop of conductor, usually with a loading capacitor at the open end and fed somewhere near the shorted end with something that looks like a gamma rod. A horizontally positioned loop antenna does launch horizontally polarized signals that are almost omnidirectional, particularly if you make the loop smaller and smaller in circumference compared to a wavelength. It becomes more and more omnidirectional. Now you want to add a helix to it. Are you now making a Ringo Ranger antenna? Is that what you're describing, Wesley? Go ahead.
UB2HWW, put a comment, please, after you have a question on the subject.
How we recognize, but go ahead, Wes.
He's talking about one that looks like a watch spring, Dick.
Gain anything by the watch spring, because the inner turns of the watch spring are really looking at the outer turns as a partial blockage. The good news about the watch spring is that you can get extra length in a particular diameter. I'm not sure that that's an advantage. Maybe at very low HF frequencies, maybe that would be an advantage. But whether you've got one turn to the loop or 40 turns, the pattern doesn't change. That's obvious by what happens on very low-frequency antennas. Very low-frequency antennas, you make a whole lot of turns to the loop, not because it changes the pattern, but by the time you've got the right number of turns, it's much easier to hit resonance. And most antennas work better if they have a natural resonance built into them. You can force them into resonance by putting across them great big tuning capacitors or a slug of ferrite material down the center. But if you can make the antenna naturally resonant, then radiating becomes easier. So I don't see any great advantage in the watch spring approach. Why would you consider that? Let's see what John's going to say. John, what do you believe is the potential advantage that makes you want to consider a watch spring multi-turn loop as opposed to a single turn? Over to you, John, K2RIW.
Dick, I see no advantage at all. I agree with you. The only way it could be used is if you had it on top, the watch spring with the center mounted on, and then drew the outer edge down so you'd have something like a conical shape. Maybe that would radiate better, but I don't believe in the watch spring antenna.
There's a whole class of log periodic antennas which really are a conical shape spiral. In other words, the bottom of the antenna, the base of the cone, has got a large diameter, and as the spiral goes up the cone, and it's one or two or three or four wires of spiral, they go to a smaller and smaller diameter. The advantage of doing that is that you get a much more broadband antenna. It is a method of making a log periodic-like structure. And they tend to radiate, those antennas radiate in an axial manner. So you build that conic spiral antenna on the roof of your car, it'll be squirting a beautiful signal straight up, nowhere near as much signal out to the horizon. You want to squirt a pancake pattern-shaped signal out to the horizon. The one way of doing it is with a horizontal plane loop, which is a little bit less than a wavelength in diameter. And if you want more gain out of one of those, then you start vertically stacking them. You could, if you want to, build a vertical stack of two, three, or four of these loop antennas coming out of your car, and that is one particular way of getting a lot of gain, horizontally polarized, omnidirectional in pattern. You know, every azimuth pattern would be coupled by a stack of vertically stacked horizontal loops.
Dick, what do you think about this concept? You have a flat watch springs, and then you're raising mechanically the middle of it up to tune it to the particular frequency, and on 2 meters. Now, when you said when the diameter of the wires are decreasing, then the antenna has more omnidirectional pattern, if I understood it properly with you.
Yeah, that's not what I was saying. The conical-shaped log periodic antenna, which really is, you start off with an insulated cone of material, and you start winding the antenna around that cone, starting off at the base of the antenna where you've got a great big winding, and as you go toward the tip of the cone, the windings get smaller and smaller. That is a log periodic, circular polarized, they call it a conical log spiral antenna. The advantage of that antenna with two spirals is that it is circular polarized broad band, and it radiates, in that example that I just described, it would radiate straight up. It doesn't have significant signal out to the horizon. It has more frequency bandwidth, but it doesn't have more gain, or just because you've made a vertical extent to the antenna, that doesn't mean it's going to radiate horizontally out to the horizon. That may not be the antenna you're looking for, Wes. Go ahead.
WB2HWW.
Sounds like Howie's got a question or a comment on this one. Go ahead, Howie.
My question was just actually, you said that if you take two dipoles, a turn file is basically two dipoles, one going north-south, one going east-west, and they're phased 90 degrees out of phase, so that means one coax is longer than the other by 90 degrees. Am I correct? That's the first part of this question, Dick.
That's correct. When you do that and feed them 90 degrees out of phase, two orthogonal antennas that are both in the plane of the Earth, that is called a turnstile antenna. no matter what angle you look at that, you can look at it from the north, the northeast, the east, the south, the west, whatever, you will see a pure vertically polarized, correction, horizontally polarized signal, and there will be no null in that pattern of the turnstile. Over to you, Howie.
What will the gain be in any direction reference to a dipole? Will it be 3 dB down?
Approximately 3 dB down, but not quite that much. Yes, if I'm looking purely from the east, I am only seeing the signal that's on the north-south dipole, and I see none of the signal that's on the east-west dipole, and you're putting half the power into each. However, if I look at it from northeast, I'm seeing some signal from both dipoles, and it doesn't have a completely omnidirectional pattern. It has a slight favoring of the four intermediate angles, northeast, southwest, southeast, northeast, southeast, southwest, northwest. Those four directions will see a little bit more signal than pure north or pure east, if you know what I mean. Over to you, Howie.
Fine. Now, next question is this. What would happen if you took two inverted Vs and had them mounted in such a way that they were mounted at the point? Now what happens? And you make it into a turnstile. You now get horizontal and vertical polarization in all directions, completely a 360-degree antenna, which is vertical and horizontal, Dick. Go ahead.
Let's start off with a simple inverted V. And let me make that inverted V where the wire itself goes east-west, and I've got the center raised such that it's all at a 45-degree angle. When I view that antenna from the north or the south, when I view that antenna broadside, it is purely horizontally polarized. When I view that antenna from the east or the west, I'm looking at the wider end view, what I see is a pure vertically polarized signal. If I view it at other angles, like northeast, I'm seeing some horizontal, I'm seeing some vertical, I get elliptical polarization. So the simple inverted V has no null direction on the horizon. It radiates in all directions. Some directions it favors horizontal, some directions it favors vertical, some directions it is elliptically polarized, but there are no nulls in the pattern. If I now put another inverted V at right angles to the first one and feed them right 90 degrees out of phase, I've now got a method by which I can make horizontal polarization appear in every direction on the compass. I've got a mechanism by which I can make vertical polarization appear in every direction on the compass. I think it's safe to say that that antenna is now elliptically polarized at every angle on the compass, but the major axis of the ellipse and the axial ratio changes in a predictable manner as you walk around that antenna. A smart guy like you, as I see it, how he is going to build that antenna, and you've got a switching matrix in the shack where, depending on who you're talking to and depending on the state of the ionosphere, you feed only the horizontal, only the east-west dipole or only the north-south dipole, or you feed them in some particular complicated way where you favor more power to one than the other. You start shifting the power ratio and the phasing ratio between the
repeater, timeout, repeater, timeout, cancel.
You start feeding, you have a complicated box in the shack where you feed those two coax cables to those two antennas, and you can now adjust the power ratio and the phasing ratio. You can do a poor man's equivalent of a phased array. You can do a significant amount of electronic steering in both favored angle and favored polarization. You can have a grand old time with that antenna. How soon is it going to be before you build one of those, Howie? Over to you, K2RIW.
Well, I've been thinking of doing that for 10 meters. The question is this, Dick. Can I be able to change it, but it's not going to be in the shack. It's going to be on some building or near some water. I'm just very curious. If you did that, and you had it 90 degrees out of phase, and you didn't change, and you did that, what would the gain be? Would it be unity gain? Unity gain, or would you be down 3 dBs in all directions? What would the gain be? Some places you might be like a dB and a half down, and other places you'd be exactly 3 dB down because of the power division. the power divider effect. My question is this: how do you think an antenna like that would work for DX on a skip conditions in which you don't know if you're getting a vertical or horizontal, the ionosphere is changing, and you didn't want to change the steering because you physically couldn't be there, and you didn't want to remote control it. In general, that antenna would probably be a good compromise, right?
When you said the antenna is going to be 3 dB down, I don't agree. You use good common sense. Half the power is going to the east-west dipole, half the power is going off to the north-south dipole. And so if I'm looking at that antenna from the north, I'm going to be seeing the horizontal polarization from the east-west dipole. That's the one that's broadside to me. I'm going to be seeing vertical polarization from the north-south dipole. I'm seeing power from both dipoles. I'm not 3 dB down. I'm going to be averaging 0 dB down. That's the first thing. Second of all, when you're talking DX, we all simplistically think that the guy using a horizontal dipole in London is sending a signal to me, and I know that that ionosphere is twisting that signal by a phenomena called Faraday rotation, a mixture of a plasma material called ionosphere and the magnetic field of the Earth. You mix those two together, and you get a complicated polarization rotation phenomenon we call Faraday rotation. Let me drop. And up till now, I've been simplistically saying that that horizontal signal from London might arrive as a vertical signal in New York. The reason why that's simplistic is the ionosphere is a lot more complicated than that. It is not only twisting the signal, it is changing the relative magnitude of the horizontal and vertical. The only thing you can say with assurance is that the guy is launching a pure horizontal signal from London, and you are going to be getting an elliptical polarization in New York. On some days, it's going to be more vertical than horizontal. Some days, it's going to be more horizontal than vertical. Some days, it's going to be slanted 45 degrees right or whatever. The state of the ionosphere and the complicated process by which that signal bounces and curves and does everything else. In general, you're going to be getting elliptical polarization. This crossed turnstile thing, this turnstile-like pair of inverted V's is also issuing a signal that from most angles of observation is an elliptically polarized signal. Now, will the elliptical polarization, which is partially clockwise or partially counterclockwise, will it favor your particular tuning of the antenna today? Because you've got two separate feed lines coming into the shack, and because you can decide which one is fed early and late in the 90 degrees offset, you can favor one kind of elliptical, clockwise versus counterclockwise, and therefore you can find out which one will give better reception from that signal from London today. You've got an awful lot of variables to play with here. You've got a beautiful tool, a toy. Over to you, Howie, K2RIW.
But the question is this, Dick. Let's say you cannot adjust it because it's not in the shack. Just let's make that assumption. You just got to put this. This would be the best compromise than using just a dipole pointed in one direction or using a vertical. If you're looking at E-skip or F-skip conditions, this antenna would be the best compromise. Even if the clock, even if it's not clockwise, it's not favoring, it's not going to be 20 dB down. What would be the worst case scenario? Within this antenna, at least, wouldn't I be down 3 dB? So the worst case scenario, if everything is against me, I would be 3 dB down instead of being 20 dB down if I'm cross-polarized. So this antenna is my best compromise. What I'm trying to say to you is I'm not able to adjust it because I'm not physically going to be there. You get my drift?
You're not physically going to be able to adjust it because you're not physically there. But you're a guy that's smart enough to set up a remote-controlled system, telemetry-like system, where you can remotely control it if you desire. That's one thing to know about. And on average, are you going to be 3 dB down? No. On average, you're going to be 0 dB down. Because no matter what you select for an antenna, horizontal, vertical, clockwise, counterclockwise, elliptical, slanted, right, elliptical, slanted, left, left-hand, circular, polarized, whatever, Mother Nature is going to favor you something like half the time and hurt you half the time, because there's a polarization mismatch. Polarization mismatch, in theory, can give you 40 decibels of null in theory. Let me drop. Now, when I say polarization mismatch and nulling, a naive person will think that there's only two or three ways you can get that null. Not true. Have I got a purely horizontal antenna and a purely vertical wave? Yes, I'm in the null. If I got a purely clockwise wave and I got a purely counterclockwise antenna, I've got a null. If I've got a slant 45 degree elliptical polarization with an axial ratio of 3, and if I've got a same maximum axis of elliptical polarization, same axis, but one is clockwise and one is counterclockwise, I'll get a deep null. If those two elliptical polarizations are offset from each other at a 90 degree angle, I'll get almost no null at all. You study all of the kinds of polarization that are represented by something called the Poincaré sphere. You look up the chapter on circular polarization of the Antenna Engineering Handbook. I didn't say it's easy, but you'll find out there's a large number of ways you can get a null. The good news is that the deep null only occurs when the angle, the axis, is within, let me pick a number, 1 degree of being the perfect null, and that's a very rare event. So there's an infinite number of ways you can get a null, but each of those nulls are very sharp and require very exacting conditions. Stop worrying about nulls. Be more concerned about, does your antenna cover all the angles you want, and you're never going to get perfectly matched polarization, because almost everything you get off that ionosphere, if you study the polarimetry enough, almost everything coming off that ionosphere is elliptically polarized. That was brought out in that QST article of about 6 months ago on the HARP antenna system. You're the guy who started this all off, John. Look where you led us. KC2WGB, K2LAW in the TechNet.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater.
Dick, one more question and then I'll let you guys, that's not a question, but on this subject.
Go ahead, Ali.
What happens if you connect these two inverted Vs in phase? That means you don't have them 90 degrees out of phase. You're basically phasing them. What would happen?
That's one of the many switch positions you're going to have in the shack, so to speak, if you've got two separate feed lines coming in the shack. They've all got an advantage. If I had a pure horizontal dipole and a pure vertical dipole, and I feed them 90 degrees out of phase, you and I call it a turnstile. If I view that whole thing broadside, it's a clockwise or counterclockwise antenna. On the horizon, when I lay it flat to the ground, it is omnidirectional, horizontal, polarized. If I tilt the plane of that antenna up, horizontal dipole and vertical dipole, and I feed them both in phase, I'm simply making slant 45 degree polarization. You add the horizontal vector to the vertical vector, and I said the word vector because it is a E-field polarization in space, and it's a time delay displacement in space, depending on how you feed it. So in a vector manner, there's a phase of the exciting signal, and there's angles of the antennas that are launching the signal. But once you know the nature of the two antennas, you figure out by the lower superposition, what kind of signal do I get out into the universe if I feed antenna A? What kind of signal do I get out into the universe if I feed antenna B? What kind of a signal do I get out into the universe if I feed antenna A and B in this particular manner? You simply add the two effects together as a vector. So it is all predictable once you understand vector mathematics. Does that make some sense, Wes? Here we go. Howie, go ahead for you, K2LAW.
Absolutely, I understand the vectors. I'm asking you because it's hard for me to visualize for obvious reasons. So what I'm asking is if you have an inverted, if you have two inverted Vs, north and south, you feed them 90 degrees out of phase, you get the elliptical pattern like we agreed, turnstile pattern. Now if you take those two inverted Vs at the same point and put them in phase, it's actually easier to put them in phase because you can take, you feed them with 75 ohm coax cable and you can get the you can get a 50 ohm match. If you're going to try to do what, if you want to try to 90 degrees out of phase, the matching situation gets a little bit more complicated. Go ahead, Dick.
It's nowhere near as complicated as you think. If you don't even worry about impedance and you take two antennas and you put them together with a T connector, you get a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio, which is 1/2 of decibel of loss because of reflection if you didn't readjust the tuning and loading of the transmitter. And if you adjust the tuning and loading, the T connector gives you no loss, even though there's an impedance mismatch. Second of all, you thought that if you take a pair of inverted Vs at right angles to each other and feed them simultaneously, you're making elliptical polarization. Yes, that's true. Overly simplistic. If I feed a single inverted V antenna in almost every direction, I am making elliptical polarization out of the simple antenna. Only when I view it exactly broadside or exactly in fire do I see linear polarization. At all other angles, that is an elliptically polarized antenna, even before you add the second one. Now you really want to know the polarimetry at all possible azimuth angles for those two antennas for all possible ways of feeding it. You can go crazy with that if you want to, and you can do it as a senior project in your master's or your doctorate degree if you want to. But because Mother Nature is giving you elliptical polarization of various parameters every day of the week, and you want to worry about whether or not your antenna is going to favor or not favor that particular condition today, a smart guy is going to make sure he's got a big enough switching box in the shack going to those two cables where he can select how much power at what phase angle he feeds the two, and he chooses the combination that gives him the best performance today. It's another poor man's phased array, very inexpensive to establish. Over to you, Howie. You should go for it. K2RIW.
I understand where you're coming from, Dick, but I'm just asking you a simple question. I know what happens if you take two inverted Vs and have them 9 degrees and feed them 9 degrees out of phase. I'm just asking, what happens if you put them? You didn't answer my question, or I'm missing misunderstanding. Now, what happens if you feed them in phase? If you basically have two quarter wave pieces of cable from the T connector and they're both in phase, then what happens to the pattern?
No easy answer for that one. You plot that one with a computer modeling program, and no matter how you make that plot, even without changing the parameters to the antenna, depending on what elevation angle you view it at, what azimuth angle you view it at, and how you set the detector, you choose an angle of azimuth, you choose an angle of elevation, and you choose a purely vertically polarized detector, you'll get one particular pattern. Choose a horizontally polarized detector, you'll get another pattern. Choose a clockwise detector, you'll get another pattern. It's a complicated antenna. No matter how you feed it, an inverted V or a combination of inverted Vs, whether you feed them in phase, out of phase, 90 degrees, whatever, there are no nulls on that antenna. It is radiating energy in all 360, all 4 pi stair radians of space. It is filling up that sphere with RF energy. It slightly favors very little certain positions than others, depending on whether or not you're talking about clockwise, counterclockwise, elliptical clockwise, and so on, linear, horizontal, vertical, and so on. It is putting energy everywhere in the space. The only thing that's changing is the polarimetry of that energy as you change the way you feed them. I didn't give you an exact answer. You've asked an extremely complicated question. You could do your master's degree or your doctorate degree thesis on plotting that pattern if you wanted to, Howie. Over to you, Howie, K2RIW.
Okay. What you're really saying is it doesn't matter if I put them in phase or out of phase. It's not going to blow up, and it might work. Actually, I'm going to be trying this in a couple of months. I will tell you this much. For the experiments that I've ran, or just from what I could see between different guys who have repeaters on 10 meters, we have found out that horizontal antennas or inverted Vs outperform verticals. For some reason, vertical antennas do not work well with E-skip. I don't know why, but that's what we're finding, is that horizontal antennas actually perform better, either a dipole or a folded dipole. But vertical antennas on top of tall buildings just don't work well for e-skip. We're also finding out that you pick up a lot of noise that when the band opens up, you get a lot of static on the antennas. A lot of static interference, absorption. Very interesting. We're finding out that horizontal antennas work better. Thank you very much, Dick. Didn't need to tie it up.
This is pretty good stuff, Howie. Don't worry about it. You found that the horizontals are working better than vertical. Have you had a chance to compare horizontal linear versus horizontal inverted V? Is there enough data there to find out whether the inverted V has any advantage over a pure horizontal? Over to you, Howie.
I'm going to tell you something. I haven't done that, but I will tell you that when I was growing up as a kid and I was playing on 15 meters and 40 meters, I have found out, and I did a little 10-meter work, I've always enjoyed an inverted V. I do think a vertical gives you lower angle radiation, but when you want to go on 40 and work, 1,000 miles, 800, 900 miles, and you want to talk to East cars and you want to talk to different people, I have found out that an inverted V has always worked very well compared to a dipole. That's what I've noticed when I was running the Drake line and growing up as a kid. I've always noticed that inverted V's really played well.
I concur, K4NBC.
Question?
K4NBC recognized, and question also recognized. I'm hearing that now from a lot of people. An inverted V gives you a lot for the money. One simple support in the center, as high as you can get it. Center radiation is usually a lot higher than other methods of mounting. Horizontal polarization broadside, vertical polarization end fire, no nulls in any one direction, so it's radiating everywhere.
Dick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let the K4NBC come in, because he's coming in on 10 meters, actually coming through my repeater, and he's in Florida, if you don't mind picking him up, Dick.
I'd like to pick him up. K4NBC, go right ahead, sir.
K2RIW from K4NBC, 10 meters from Florida, by way of Howie's repeater. Good evening. And just wanted to say I agree with Howie when it comes to horizontal antennas. Seem to do the job far superior to verticals.
Very fine, Bob. Bob, I believe you work in broadcast. Indiantown, Florida. I think you might tell us, yeah, NBC. You're associated with the NBC network, I believe. So it sounds like you're an HFer from way back and been in television for a long time. I believe you've been sending me some emails recently. Is that true, Bob? K4NBC? And thank you, K2RIW and the TechNet.
You might have got a couple from me on the ham radio list.
And what are your favorite bands down there in Florida, Bob? Go ahead.
Well, 10 meters is one of them. I'm on South Cars on 40 occasionally, and aren't so heavy, and I can understand. But 75. Also enjoy satellite work. K2RIW, K4NBC, 10 meters from Florida.
Okay, that's a first for us, Bob. K4NBC, on 10 meters from Florida, by way of New York City and by way of the TechNet. Okay, well, that's poor signal. Lucky it doesn't get tired when it goes that far, Bob. Thank you for checking in. The person who had a question, who was that? Give me your call letters and your name. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
KC2QIQ with a comment.
Glenn recognized, but the query first. Go ahead.
Okay, good evening, Dick. My name is Doug. The call is KD2SIE. You guys have been talking about dipoles, inverted Vs, and, 10 meters. I mean, it's real easy, but as far as I know, you start going, you got to be at least, one quarter lambda above Earth or anything reflective, preferably one half lambda. How do these things start looking, when you're talking 75 meters and we can only get them up? I'm running an inverted V. at, center point is maybe 45 up, the ends are 30, 35, and it works great for DX. Yeah, how does this start looking when you start doing two, like a turnstile, and you want to shift them around?